Sam, how are you feeling after an awesome epic win at Octagon MMA 56?
I feel good, feel great. The high of that win is wearing off a little bit, as it naturally will, which leaves me hungry for my next opponent and who they're going to line me up next. But I feel good. Good performance from me, I believe. Could have been better at times, but you deal with what's in front of you, and Aaron brought his A game, and one was just better in the night.
Yes. You say wearing off already, but I mean, three-time champion, that's not a small deal. That's a big deal, and it's a big achievement. So I mean, you must I mean it's not gonna wear off, at least not for some time at least.
Honestly, for a lot of people in and around me, I think that tag is a bigger thing than it is for me. I'm a three-time world champion now, but I've been world class as an athlete for a long time. I've been very, very good. Made some mistakes on the journey and that, but I'm well aware of the level that my skills are at, and I can compete with anybody on my day. So it is nice to have that tag of, three-time world champion. But honestly, I've been here a long time. I'm ready for whoever in the world they're going to throw at me next.
How did that win feel? Just the overall experience, the because Octagon MMA, they're not fun, they're not the UFC or Bellator, but they've got a significant global reach, so definitely a lot of eyes worldwide, not just here in the UK, but a lot of eyes worldwide would have been on the event and on your fight.
Yeah, absolutely. It was probably the most entertainment high value show that I've competed on. It was the glitz, the glamour, the camera, the lights, the arena, the build up pre-fight, the social media stuff, the interviews, the vlogs, following me around, the pre-fight stuff. That's all really big stuff that I've not really experienced massively before. That was a nice thing to enjoy. I know from feedback I've got from everybody who went to the show and that they said it looked amazing. Everybody who was watching on TV, they all said like everything looked just amazing as a show and that. And the guys who watched on TV want to come to the next one. And the guys who are there in person are looking forward to my next fight so they can come along as well.
Can you talk about your success in Cage Warriors being a two-time champion in that promotion? Because one thing that I would have thought after that, the UFC should have picked you up. I mean, if you're that good of a fighter, then we're we waiting for we should take this guy quickly before someone else snaps him up, you know?
Honestly, I've probably been on the verge. I would say I've been in the UFC for many, many years. Unfortunately, I've made terrible decisions at very inopportune moments. I've rushed for fights at times because I want to be active again. I've taken fights, having been unwell when I probably should have taken a little longer to rest. And I've made poor emotional decisions with attachments to fights that have probably cost me in the long run. But it for me, it's part of the journey, part of my story, and that it's not supposed to be perfect. I was not supposed to do this. I never left school and thought this is what my career is going to be. Didn't know what fighting really was or martial arts was until I was 21. So this is almost like my own introduction into martial arts is an accident. I've stumbled, I've tripped, but I'm still here. I'm still fighting, and I don't look any lesser of a fighter now than I did 5 years ago. So I'm always ready for the call. I can take on anybody in that UFC division tomorrow.
Oh,
There's no
definitely.
standouts there.
Speaking of getting into mixed martial arts, can you give just a bit of a backstory about your background and you know just more detail how you became involved in the sport? What was it that gave you a knack for it that kind of I like this and I like to see you compete in it professionally?
So I got into it by accident. I'd finished playing rugby a few years before that. I wasn't getting any taller and no heavier. And I wasn't doing a great deal, like sports wise. And my brother kept on badgering me about going to this new MMA gym that had opened in our town at the time. Eventually he badgered me enough to get me down there, and it was okay. I enjoyed it. I wasn't obsessed until I'd lost my first fight. So I went through probably about 6 months of training. We didn't really have like a coach. It was just a lot of guys who wanted to learn MMA altogether. I had my first fight. I lost in the first round. I got submitted in the first round, and that I didn't enjoy that feeling very much. And that pretty much lit a fire in me, and created this kind of relentless obsession with improving and never being put in that situation again where I just didn't know what to do. Turning professional, like however many years down the line, I had a decent amateur career. I won six belts as an amateur. I think my record ended up 16-4. And I fought some of the best guys in the country, really experienced guys as an amateur. But I didn't really think about turning pro. That wasn't really, again, part of the career ambitions, if you like, at the time. It got to a point though where it would have been more a shame that I didn't use these skills that I picked up, and you know, the place I'd got to as an athlete at the time, without testing, I don't know, the pro circuit to see if I was made for it. So I had a lot of support from my family, my training partners, and then they pushed me in that direction of turning pro. I turned pro, but I wasn't really a pro. I think that would have come more with my first loss as a professional. I realized that I was still training like an amateur, still treating my career like an amateur was, but fighting under professional rules. And things have changed since then. I still make mistakes, as we all do in life, but I feel they are fewer and less frequent now.
I looked at your fight record. You got a really good amateur record. You know, would you say that it was almost like as if, would I say, fighting found you? It was just a matter of time before you kind of fell into it, and you're gonna do well in this anyway.
It felt like what it feels to me like now. Martial arts is what I was missing all through my childhood, probably. You know, it feels like it has been something that I should have had all my life, something that I was just missing all my life, a little missing piece of the jigsaw, if you like. It's something that I can't ever imagine I'd live without now. You know, it's become such a big part of my life. I think when I was younger, I was a bit lost. Didn't really know where I was heading in life. I had ambitions, but they kind of changed all the time, as they do when you're young. And I didn't really have any massive goals like this is what I want to achieve, this is what I want to do. It was just kind of float from this idea to that idea until I found martial arts and fighting by mistake. You know, and now here we are. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I'll be fighting until, you know, until it's time to hang up the gloves. I'll be pushing on the next generation, and I'll be teaching and coaching martial arts to young kids, and anybody I possibly can, opening up my own academy eventually and teaching to the day that I die.
Is any particular figure in the sport that probably probably from the time that you started that perhaps maybe kind of inspired you or that encourage you to keep on competing that you think of when you're standing in the octagon facing your opponent?
Yeah, there are characters. Like my brother's obviously, he's a big one. The guy who got me into MMA in the first place, my main training partner, somebody who makes me think I'm shit every single day. he's a perfect example of like a voice that would be in my head while I'm in the cage as well, even if he's not cornering me at the time. I'd still be aware of like I'd hear his voice in the back of my head telling me to do something. Got one of my coaches, Rich. He's my pad man and that really good Thai boxer. But he's more than a Thai boxer. He had a very, very fluid kicking game, which kind of suited me really well, and like he was a master of that. And that he's obviously he's a very good friend as well. But we talk often, and he keeps me motivated. He's always been in my corner and that as well, and he's given me advice and going away and reshaping, parts of my game for years. And then I've got my other coaches, my jiu-jitsu coaches, Kev and Dan. They're very helpful. They've both done MMA as well in the past. They've both got experience in jiu-jitsu. And then the other voice that comes to me sometimes is one of my old training partners, Vaughn Lee. He's coached me a few times in that. Used to be in the UFC. Probably like the most accomplished, well-rounded striker that like I've ever come across. When I first met him and asked if I could spar with him, I was at a decent level as an amateur, and I couldn't lay a hand on him. Couldn't lay a hand on him, not for 5 rounds. He made me question what I was even doing. And he's been really supportive of my career and that, and like helped me loads. He's a good man. And like all of those people, they're all good humans, and they help me. And in the times when I'm in the cage and that, I can hear their voices. Like even if I can't physically hear their
Yes, yeah.
voices, they're in my head. They're with me, in my heart and that while I'm in there. But they're really positive role models for me as well.
Can you talk a bit about your gym, which I, if I'm not mistaken, it's the Roger Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Academy? I mean, because with someone with a brilliant fight record like yourself, obviously there must be something in that gym. The people behind you, there must be something right that's happening there to achieve the sort of success that you have achieved.
There certainly is. I've been at other gyms as well over the years and that, but and they've all helped to shape me, and they're all brilliant gyms as well. But RGA Bucks is where I call home. The coaches there, the training partners there, the community there is really strong, really strong. And we can talk about anything, but it's I think that feels like home for me. And that, if anything, it just makes me have that level of comfort that I know I can rely on everybody in that gym. I've got a home there. I've got people who are going to help me there, but nobody wants to take my head off. Nobody with a bit too much ego. We all just want to help each other to be as successful as we can individually and as a team. Super grateful for everybody there.
So let's say your next fight's coming up, say in the next month or so. So for Sam Creasy, what would the typical fight camp look like? I mean, For I know it's like asking how long a piece of string is. I mean, it won't look too different for any other fighter, but for you as your specific unique self, how would you go about things like, such as nutrition and training wise and all those things?
Say we're a month out from the fight. I have to make sure my weight is in a good place, so it's just checking my weight every morning. I'm gifted genetically in that, like, weight can drop off me pretty quick if I wanted to. So it's not really too much of an issue. I just need to be aware of where I'm at on the scales in the morning. Nutrition wise, I'm just making sure I hit all my protein targets during the day, and then I'll look at, what kind of training I'm going to do that day. Do I need carbs this morning? Do I need carbs this afternoon? Am I training late? Am I training early? What is the training going to be? How intense is it going to be? That kind of thing. We'll go into that. And then that is almost, so that's your nutrition structure, but then that also follows the same plan as structuring the routine for the day for your training. So what do I need to tick off? How many times do I need to spar this week? Who am I going to spar with? Who's my opponent? Is he tall? Is he short? Is he stocky? And then figure out, okay, who have I got as a training partner who can come and help me with that this week? Who can provide me with those tells, those looks that are similar to this guy? Scheduling a few pad rounds, putting in some wrestling rounds, and just making sure, honestly, like I've structured my training so I'm almost in a camp all the time, if you like. But I know what the training I'm going to do is most days. I know that I've got a wrestling session on a Saturday morning and then on a Tuesday. I know that I can spar on a Wednesday. And then I'll probably do a pads on a Monday and a Friday. And then that leaves a little bit of wiggle room around the other sessions in the week. And the only thing I change is the intensity. How can I, or how much energy is there towards keeping, say, a top position and being far more strict with my control and my movement in fight camp, or having a little bit more freedom to play, to try new stuff, to fail. If I go for this and it fails in the gym today, doesn't matter because I'm not in the camp anymore. So I'm not losing points from this position. Then I can work out a way around that to get a better finish from there. And that'd be pretty much it. That's nothing else really changes for me. I try not to focus ever really on an opponent as such. I'll let my coaches play around with some pad stuff with me. And again, the same with the grappling. It will be up to them. But the majority of it is, I'm a well-rounded guy. I'm comfortable everywhere. It doesn't really matter what he's going to do. It should matter more what I'm going to go and do in the fight.
Of course, of course. So something like making weight for the upcoming fight, you said that you're someone who, in terms of genetics, you've got a fast metabolism, so the weight tends to drop off quite fast. It's easy for you to make weight.
Well, I say it's easy for me to make weight. It's easy for me to drop fat off me quickly.
That's it.
Making weight is a balance of being heavy enough still that you're going to balance the scales correctly and not cutting too well that I'm on weight too early and then giving up a weight or strength advantage, say come fight time. So I could make weight, well, I could have made weight 3 weeks before my fight, but because I was in almost too good a position weight wise, I then ate some more. 3 weeks out from the fight, I can eat a little bit more. I don't need to be this weight. I need to be a little bit heavier, in fact. All I did was up my carbs a little bit higher in that and fill out my muscles a little bit more and then chop that back a week and a half out. But The actual weight cut in itself, the baths, the hot baths, the dehydration part, that never looks good on me. I mean, the shape of my face, it always looks like I'm very close to being a drug addict.
Oh, wow.
But that's gone within, probably half an hour, and my face is full again and my body starts to fill up. But a weight cut isn't, not for me anymore now, too much of an issue. It's just something that has to be done. You've got to have that mental fortitude to just sit it out and try to think sweet thoughts until it's all done.
Yeah, of course. You said that when you had your first fight, you didn't win. Now, could I say that maybe that was one of the driving forces and driving factors into all, the wins and the successes that you achieved? That it was the first fight, you didn't feel good, and you thought to yourself, I never ever want to feel that way again. Was that one was one of the driving forces that pushed you to getting being a three-time champion like that you are today?
It has eventually, I've said before, this whole thing is an accident. Like that loss created a drive in me initially to get back in the gym and learn how to grapple. That then turned into an enjoyment of grappling eventually, and then further development in that field by then joining a jiu-jitsu gym, and learning how to grapple in a different art rather than just MMA grappling, which is just no-gi basically. But that obsession to train and to learn how to be better was the first part. The fights were the fights and they were just fun at the time. I met my wife in the gym. She used to come to the fights and that. I used to just take, like, when I had no training partners at some point, because I think quite a few of them were away or working, I ended up just taking my mechanic to a fight with me, having him in my corner. And it was just fun. It was fun. It was enjoyable, and I was improving every fight and then learning more about the sport, learning about who do I need to speak to, promotions, promoters, and then doing my own little bits of research eventually when the idea came around that I might be okay at this, and people were talking about me being pro, meant that I was looking at the professionals at the time and seeing kind of how they structured things, how big they were, how their camps, how long they were, how much kind of weight they would lose, where I would sit naturally in a weight class, and that, and then the skills that were involved in being a professional and the way to conduct yourself. So all of it started from scratch by mistake, and that first loss certainly helped me on the journey. But it showed me a lot as well, because like I've met a lot of guys who come into a gym and they want to fight. They want to fight. They want to fight. They're desperate for a fight. They'll have a fight. They'll lose the fight because they had it too early. And then you'll never see them again. And it's really sad, because a lot of them are really talented. But that's why I don't like to train fighters. I like to train martial artists. And then if they want to become a fighter afterwards, let's create the fighter. But if I don't want to just train a fighter, because likelihood is he'll be in. And then if he loses, he'll be gone, and I won't see him again. And I want a martial artist to be there forever. I want them to explore the sport. I want them to push the sport. I want the sports to grow, and I want that martial arts to grow, and to spread that everywhere they go.
No, I like that. I like that a lot. It's something, a skill that you should have with you for life. And when I say it's a vocation, like a career, that's it's like there is this kind of discussion debate that in schools at the very least is something that should be taught, because they think, well, it's kind of believed that now, if people kind of understood martial arts, partook or partaked in martial arts activities, probably people would behave with a lot more respect and discipline towards each other, and also in their daily lives as well. Society might run a bit better and a lot more smoothly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I also think I probably, as a child, I probably had a form of ADHD, which is probably why I was a little bit lost growing up. And this is why, like, my obsession with this sport is an unhealthy, healthy one.
Really?
Yeah, it's a sheer obsession because I must get better. And I can't ever switch off from trying to get better. But it's the healthiest addiction I could have. So I think it's really helped me. I think possibly once I do retire, I'll have a look at putting together some kind of program, and testing that with some kids with ADHD and other things like that, who can maybe come to me before school. We do some training sessions and that, and then see if they can perform any better in their school day after they've trained, as opposed to, do their school day and then train.
That'll be interesting. Probably if they did it before the school day, before they went to class or anything, they might feel, I'm guessing they might feel a bit better, because any kind of unspent energy or rage has been vented out. I mean, I know that's how I felt after having a pad session with a coach. You were talking about retiring, but surely that's still going to be a long, long wait, long, long time before that happens.
I like to think so.
Yes.
I'm 36 on paper, and that is when some people would be considering retirement. I don't feel 36. I still move like a 20-year-old.
I can see that.
I do feel like if the time is right, I'll know when it's time to hang them up, and not only that, my family's going to tell me. They're not going to let me mess around with this if, if my brain's playing tricks on me. But I'm in a good position. I'm healthy. I'm active. I'm still taking out lots of prospects and competing with all the young guys in the gym and that. So I don't think that's even a consideration at the minute.
I was listening to one of your past interviews on your channel, and one of the things you mentioned was social media and combat sports. And in more detail, you mentioned how these influencers are trying to move into the combat sports scene, starting with boxing, with what we've seen with the Paul brothers and some other YouTubers. You said you'd like to see them come to mixed martial arts, but before I ask you to get into that, I mean, what do you think of all these influences coming into combat sports?
I'm in two minds about it, if you like. Because when I look at martial arts, I think of the respect, I think of the discipline, I think of the honor of the sport and that. And I think with a lot of these influencers, they don't really have the same kind of intentions. That being said, they bring so many eyes to the sport. They are entertainers, and what they create is entertainment. They bring people to come and watch them, and that is something that that can only be a good thing for the sport at the same time. So I'm in two minds about it, if you like, but I think for the sport to really grow, you're going to need characters like that, either in the sport or interested in the sport at the very least. The martial arts side of things, I guess, doesn't always entertain in the same way or bring. It brings an audience, but the influencers and those kind of stars are going to bring a different kind of audience. And it's more eyes on us. And more eyes on us means more money. More money means the sport can grow bigger. And we can look after the fighters better.
So you don't think, well, would an influencer really come to martial arts, mixed martial arts, beyond, would they go past boxing? I mean, could I see the Paul brothers in a mixed martial arts fight? Because MMA is, it's like it's all of the boxing, BJJ, all merged into one, and it's far more brutal.
The Paul brothers are probably the most likely to be able to do it anyway, simply because they have wrestled. They've wrestled through, through college. They've boxed to a certain degree now. They're at a decent level. And they're both pretty athletic guys. A lot of these influencers aren't.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can try to learn in that short period of time. But if you have been wrestling for a decent period of your life, some jiu-jitsu in addition to that, your boxing skills, and then the ability to kick a little bit, they could probably do all right. They could win quite a few fights, I would imagine. And that, again, they'll bring a lot of eyes to the sport again. I just think boxing for them is makes far more sense. It's far less to do. They can sell it a lot better, and they can keep on fighting these old MMA guys.
It doesn't make, if they're fighting the older guys in all these exhibition matches and whatever, it doesn't make it a fair, even fight, does it?
No, like if they were fighting a real pro boxer. I mean, I don't see it ever ending that well for them. That don't get me wrong, they'll be able to hang in there. They'll probably be able to spoil a lot, and they'll land some punches. But a real well-trained pro boxer would tear them apart.
Yeah. Nice. Look, you speak very well. You sound very articulate, speak slowly, candidly. You're a very good orator. Have you ever considered maybe, starting your own, I know it does take time, but your own podcast, your own show? 'Cause I think a lot of people, especially with the belts and title success behind you that you've achieved, people would listen to what you have to say.
It's something that I did think about previously, not even necessarily just for martial arts, just a, I guess like a podcast just on my thoughts on whatever subject it may be, and then getting some other guys I know involved with it. Like, that's an interest of mine, possibly a little bit further down the line, perhaps. Something where I can like expand on some of these thoughts that I have, and maybe let some of these ideas float for a longer form conversation, and see where we end up. But yeah, that's something I'm definitely interested in at some stage.
And when can we see you stepping into Octagon next time?
Let's see who they got for me next. I know there is a flyweight fight, I think 2 weeks' time in Germany. And then they got the big stadium later on in the year, 55,000 people there. Let's see who wins that fight. And then I think quite possibly that's the one to make after that. And we go and make some noise.
Last but by no means least, any shout outs you want to give?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, to all my sponsors, you guys, you help me massively. Without your help, it'd be very difficult to continue to be a professional and carry on doing what I'm doing. So, I'm very grateful. All the fans, all the supporters, I appreciate you. Honestly, when I get these messages, post fight, pre fight, I carry them all in there with me. I'm a very emotional guy, and I carry them carry my heart on my sleeve, and you're all in there with me, right? When I'm walking into that cage, I can feel my chest beating, and with each beat is that, I can feel you there with me. So my appreciation to you all. Training partners, my coaches, I'm grateful. I wouldn't be half the fighter I was without any of you guys. So, you make me better and you keep me accountable all the time. Yeah. Keep on critiquing me. Yeah. Keep on kicking my ass. I need it. My family, my loved ones, my wife, my daughter, you're my everything, and I'm so grateful that I have you all by my side supporting me, and let's hope we've got many more days of this.
Sam Creasy, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you, and definitely we're having you on the show very soon, for sure.
Pleasure, my friend.
Guys, if you enjoyed the episode, please don't forget to leave a like and hit the subscribe button if you're watching this on YouTube. You can also catch the audio versions on Spotify, iTunes, and also on Google Podcasts. If you're listening on Spotify, don't forget to leave a rating. It also helps the podcast if you do that as well. Sam, once again, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you.
Cheers.
Take care.